Thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Bob Kinzel, co-host of Vermont Edition. Just wanted to let you know that this has been edited for brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Even with a delayed start until September 8th, the school year is almost upon us. School and district administrators have been trying to come up with plans for what the fall might look like in terms of in-person, remote, and hybrid instruction models. And parents have been trying to figure out how to meet the needs of their families and whether they should enroll their children in their districts at all. But what about the teachers? Teachers are going to have to implement the plans their districts have come up with. Some have been involved in those local decisions, but some teachers say their perspectives were largely ignored. Some teachers are fearful of returning to the classroom while others are not. And many teachers are also parents themselves and may now be trying to implement a hybrid learning plan for their own kids while they're teaching in the classroom for 4 days a week. Today on Vermont Edition, we wanted to concentrate on teacher voices. We have a panel of four public school teachers joining us from different parts of the state and from different parts of the educational system. Amy Braun is a kindergarten and first grade teacher at Rochester Elementary School. Amy, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored.
Joe Carroll is a Latin and philosophy teacher at Montpelier High School. Hi, Joe. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Eric Hutchins teaches social studies at Lamoille Union High School in Hyde Park. Hi, Eric. Thanks very much to you as well.
Yeah, hi, thank you. It's my pleasure.
And Kate LaBelle is a physical education teacher who teaches at Rutland Intermediate School. Kate, what a pleasure. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit just about each of your plans and what's happening in your schools and just sort of a generalized idea of how you feel about it. And so we can get a little bit of a sense of what it looks like for each of you in your district and your schools. And then we can dig into some of these meaty topics, which could each take an hour. Like, what is a remote learning plan going to look like? How do we ensure teacher safety and student safety? What kind of confidence do you have in the plans for what happens if there's an exposure or a case in a classroom you work in the school you work in, et cetera? So we'll get into all of those. But Amy, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about what the plan is at Rochester Elementary School and how you feel about it?
Okay. So I work in the White River Valley Supervisory Union, and across the whole SU, the decision is to be 5 days. So it's not a hybrid at this point. We have given parents and families a choice of in-person versus remote, and so that choice needs to be made, and then they need to stick with the decision through Thanksgiving. So it's the first roughly 9 weeks of school, which that's the plan.
How does that feel to you?
Well, I'm feeling like a hybrid version would be comfortable for me, because I feel like even at the local level where I am versus other schools in the supervisory union, every school is different. Every town is different. And families need different things depending upon where they are. So I'm a big fan of the idea of a hybrid.
So you wish your school had been hybrid. Doing. Yeah.
Well, at this point, sure. I mean, I have children, and my children have different things that they need to be doing in the fall. And so I am a parent in addition to being a teacher, and my daughter has a hybrid. So that makes a little bit of complication in our lives. So. There's that. But on another level, I just, again, just want to reiterate that each town is different. And I think that local control is an important thing if local voice is heard.
And for you, you said that parents have to choose, and then so there will be a choice. For those who are enrolling their students in school, not doing a homeschool curriculum that is independent of the school district, but for those who are going to enroll, it's either 5 days in person or 5 days remote. So is there a kindergarten and first grade teacher for each of those plans, or are you trying to do both?
So within the district, the decision will be finalized early part of next week, because a survey went out to families where they made the decision of in-person or remote. As far as homeschooling, no one's really been asked if that's what they're doing. But by next week, the decision will be kind of solidified. And then it would mean that I can choose to stay in person or to fill out a form which says that I have a family member who has underlying health concerns. And if that's the case, then I could start to become a online learning academy educator. But I have to have an underlying health concern in my life in order to be able to be an online educator versus the situation of being the in-person teacher.
Wow. Well, that's so complicated. Joe Carroll, you teach, as I said, Latin and philosophy at Montpelier High School. Your school is a hybrid model, right?
Yes. Our students will attend school for 2.5 hour classes on Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. And we're kind of dividing them up into two cohorts. Half the kids will be there in the morning and the other half in the afternoon. And Wednesdays are only for remote learning, and no students will be in the building on those days. And similarly, our school also gave families a choice. So about 20% of our families are enrolling for a full-time remote option.
Joe, so that's interesting. So in this hybrid model, kids will actually be in the school building 4 days a week. It's just for a shortened either morning or afternoon session?
Yes, exactly right.
Wow, that I hadn't heard much about that. How does that feel to you?
Well, the plan is interesting and creative in itself, but the existence of the plan kind of assumes that it's safe to return, and that's kind of where my fears are. I think we're moving too fast, and I think the situation calls for a little bit more caution, deliberation, discussion. So the plan itself, I don't necessarily have a problem with. It's the assumptions that make the plan a reality.
When you say we're moving too fast, I mean, yes, I think a lot of people share that concern, whether they're administrators or teachers or family members. And yet, here comes September and something has to happen. What do you think should have happened that would feel like a more deliberative approach?
Well, frankly, I think we could have said to the families earlier on in the summer that September and October would be remote, and it could have given the teachers enough time to prepare a better remote learning option. And I think that that would have helped assuage some of the concerns that families have that remote learning is a subpar experience for the kids. I want to be clear. I miss teaching in person. I love my students. I love my classes. I want to be back in person. But the issue isn't whether or not we want to be back in person. It's whether or not it's safe to be back.
Yeah. What about for you, Eric? You're also at a high school situation. You're a social studies teacher at Lamoille Union High School. Hybrid system, but there's sort of a different approach as well for you?
Yeah, I mean, we have a students 2 days, half the student body in on Monday and Tuesday, Wednesday off for teacher prep and deep cleaning, and then the other half the students in on Thursday and Friday. And we've also offered an online option for students and families who choose that. But I want to echo a little bit of what Joe said about it. You know, we've got all these cool plans that innovative and compassionate educators and administrators have come up with. But the bigger issue is what is safe, and also what we stand to gain by doing any amount of in-person learning. You know, like I think there's a risk reward analysis that we're doing, and, you know, there's widely varying opinions on what the risk is of being in school in person, but there's not a lot of analysis of the reward. And I think that that's a mistake because, you know, what we learned from the emergency online learning in the spring and the summer to prepare, I think we can provide a much better online experience in the fall than we did in the spring. And also, in-person learning under pandemic restrictions is not going to be at all what in-person learning was like before the pandemic. There's a lot of things that we're going to lose in that, you know, that are valuable to kids, you know, like interscholastic sports are going to suffer. Many clubs won't get to meet. Certainly socialization will be limited. Clubs, things like bands, choir, music, theater are going to be severely limited. And a lot of the things that make learning fun and socially, emotionally enriching are going to be lost. And I think while we want to go back to in-person learning, this kind of in-person learning might not be worth the risk that we're engaging in during this public health crisis.
Yeah, Eric, I definitely agree with you there in that part of the conversation is not something we hear about much, at least at the state level. I think, as you said, a lot of teachers are thinking about this and a lot of parents and students are probably thinking about this as well. You know, what is the in-person learning going to look and feel like? But there is sort of, I think, at least in the press conferences, a sort of a sense of it's either remote learning or in person like it was before. It sort of feels like, oh, everybody knows what school felt like before and everybody would want to get back to that. And I hear you saying, you know, it is not going to feel like a normal school year when you are in the building.
Yeah, we've done forums with some of our students, you know, virtual video conference forums. And after hearing the host of restrictions around, you know, kids will be in pods, right? They'll have the same 10 kids that they are with all day, you know, every day for a full quarter to limit, you know, potential virus transmission. And a bunch of other restrictions around breaks and you know, bathrooms and a whole bunch of host of other things, you know, no cafeteria. And, you know, a couple of students upon hearing this said it sounds like prison and they would rather do remote learning. You know, not a thing they would have said in the spring, because that remote learning experience was, you know, an emergency one. But I think that might be a better option and we should be considering more. I hear the things that Governor Scott and Dr. Levine say, but, you know, business has got the spigot, you know, and what we have with the schools is 175 faucets of widely varying pressure and intensity, and it doesn't feel right.
Well, there's an image. That's not the metaphor that is as easily consumed as the spigot metaphor. Kate LaBelle, you're a physical education teacher at Rutland Intermediate School. First of all, what's the situation at your school for what kind of learning families and teachers can expect?
A lot of the similarities to what Amy said in the beginning, our administration gave families an option to see what they'd feel more comfortable with. There was a survey they went out. Most students have chosen to come back 5 days a week, but I know, we're a very large school. We have about 550 kids, I think, but about 100 are choosing to go remote. So the last I was informed, there'll be one remote teacher per grade-ish, and the rest will be in-person teaching. But same thing that everyone else has said. I know that I've got caught up in the, we're going back to school and it will feel good to see the kids and it'll feel good to see the teachers. I'm like, and I'm a people person. And like, there's definitely been that, like, I don't have the endurance to keep being on high alert. And I've found back to school and then I catch my eyes. Well, it's not going to be the way that it was. And that's hard to picture. And it'll be interesting when we go back.
Kate, can you give us a sense of what you think physical education is actually even going to look like? Are you going to be teaching classes outside? And then in the colder weather, do you have to teach classes in their classroom rather than a gymnasium? I mean, how do you even do phys ed?
I know that there's different phases. I know that we're starting in, I believe, phase two and hoping to get to phase three. But as of what the documentation that was sent out right now is that gymnasiums are not allowed to be accessed by PE teachers, and those are our classrooms. And it was really hard to hear that because it is one of the largest spaces, if not the largest space in the building. And if classroom teachers can have their students in their classroom safely, I think that there should be trust and understanding that PE teachers can do the same. And we're very creative and flexible and adaptable instructors, that we can do the same in our gyms. I think a lot of PE teachers are very thankful that we do have the availability to go out in our fields and teach outside, especially in September, October. I can't speak for everybody, but I have no problem being a team player and taking my kids outside. It's probably safer that way. But as November and December come, I'm really hoping that things will have progressed in a positive manner and I won't be teaching in a classroom because it's just the kids aren't going to get the movement they need. They're not going to get the mental health break to go and just be able to have that socialization. I think a lot of the reasons people want their kids to go back to school is because of that socialization, the play, the ability to be kids and not in front of a computer. But if we're taking away PE and it's just going to be in a classroom at their desks, it's just really sad to think about.
We got a note from Susan, a retired physical education teacher, who says phys ed is a core subject in Vermont. Our children need to move outside. A normal physical education teacher would see each child two times a week for 40 minutes. At some schools in Vermont this fall, there are some cases when a PE teacher will only see kids four times per quarter. Other schools are delivering, quote, real physical education. And Susan writes, we need to help advocate for physical education for all students, not just a few. Kate, are you talking with other physical education teachers around the state and seeing a lot of variability just as there's so much variability in the model?
Absolutely. I serve on the SHAPE Vermont board, which is the Society of Health and Physical Education. And we've been doing trainings all summer and trying to get feedback from people. And every single district is so different. I'm very fortunate that I feel like I am as close to real PE as I possibly can in the, you know, COVID times at Rutland Intermediate School. They're allowing me to have 2 days a week still. And, you know, we're pretty much as close as we can be with, you know, what we're working with. But I have heard from other colleagues around the state who are teaching, you know, in their office through a computer that's going to be broadcast into the classroom. I'm really nervous about PE getting cut. We are a core subject now because we have standardized testing in the spring with FitnessGram. And I think all specials teachers know that as resources and minutes get cut from specials programs, it's really, really hard to get those back. And I think a lot of phys ed and health educators, and I'm sure art and music as well are nervous about that.
Stephanie says, I am a music educator in the Harwood Unified Union School District. We are being pitted against each other, parents versus teachers, and this is not fair. The community is forgetting that so many of us teachers are parents. My children are in third and fifth grade in the same district where I teach, and I'm concerned for their safety as well as my own. I also worry for the health of my mother who lives in our home. How would I or my children live with the weight of making her sick because the agency of education, who is working remotely, I might add, rushed us back into the old school buildings before it was safe? There are alternatives that work. This is not spring 2020, and we need to stop comparing it to that. How do I look in the eyes of my crying 8-year-old who is saying she doesn't want to go back to school and tell her that she doesn't have a choice because mommy doesn't have a choice? Our schools are not broken. The entire system is. And that starts at the top. We got a note from Meg, a Barnett Elementary reading teacher, who says, I teach elementary reading in the Northeast Kingdom. I am proud of the way that this spring teachers rallied and in a matter of days were able to reach students with a continued educational program via distance learning. This learning took on many forms due to the ages and internet capabilities of students. There was, however, much solid instructional learning. My question is, why hasn't anyone surveyed teachers about the successes of distance learning so we can build upon that? My district is planning a hybrid model and surveying parents about which method they prefer. Families have been worried that at some point in the event of a second wave of virus, we may all need to revert to the model of past spring. Why not just hone and perfect what we began by asking teachers about their successes? And Beverly says, what is not discussed is the fact that school will not be the hub of connection it was pre-COVID-19. Students in restrictive environments who are unable to socialize as previously, with interactions highly monitored and restricted, and the comfort from an adult will only be masked and 6 feet away. I know that remote learning does not meet full measure for all learners and that home is not necessarily a place of comfort or safety for all. However, we cannot delude ourselves into thinking that this will be a medically or social-emotionally safe setting. Boy, lots of concern about in-person learning this fall from many teachers who are writing to us. And again, you can add your perspective by calling 800-639-2211. We're talking with Kate LaBelle, a physical education teacher at Rutland Intermediate School, Joe Carroll, who teaches Latin and philosophy at Montpelier High School, Eric Hutchins, a social studies teacher at Lamoille Union High School in Hyde Park, and Amy Braun, a kindergarten and first grade teacher at Rochester Elementary School. Lots to chew on, and, you know, it's suddenly this hour is looking very short. But, Amy, let me come back to you. You know, when we think about the risk and reward, as I think Joe and Eric were talking about it, and this idea that there may actually be really, really good learning that can be done in a remote setting for students this fall that feels and looks different from the spring when we did it in an emergency. How do you square that possibility with the idea that for at least a significant number of students, they're not going to be available for that kind of robust remote learning program? You know, either their parents are working and they have to be in childcare, especially for, you know, first and kindergartners. It's not safe for them at home. Or they don't have the technological capacity to be able to be doing online learning that is, you know, based on a computer or on technology. Or they have a different style of learning that really doesn't work well with remote learning. You know, how, Amy, do you see, you know, here are the possibilities for remote learning, but here are the practicalities for many of the families that I'll be working with?
Yes. So I guess what I want to talk about quickly is the rewards of being in person, you know, because I do feel like that's the best way. I saw one of my former students this morning who ran up to me from about 20 feet away and hugged me. And so I do want to say that when you're around kids, you know, there's this connection that you can have when you're in person. I will be in the fall in person working with them outside if I am forced into the situation of going back. So I just want to say all of that first, because mm-hmm. there's definitely a connection that occurs, especially at the age group that I work with. Now, as far as remote, it is a challenge, especially for kids the age group that I work with. But those kinds of experiences can be worked out. There are ways to have a Google meeting and set it up where we're all experiencing something at the same time virtually. You know, for example, we could have a bonfire. I could have one going in my backyard, for example, and then everybody has the ingredients and we make s'mores, and then we write about how the s'mores tasted. And so there are ways, for example, to connect. And it does take more work. I worked harder this past spring than I ever have worked in my 25 years of teaching in that experience. It was really hard, and screen time is not good for kids. So I do want to say that it's not the easy way out. It's just, at the moment, it's the safer way to experience it. And I happen to have two kids at home myself who have underlying health concerns. So for me, I would work really hard remotely to try to make those experiences be the best they could be to connect with those kids, because, you know, safety, a safety of their families, safety of the children, and safety of my community as well.
But I guess I mean, like, let's say three of the kids, let's say you're doing this remote model and three of the kids are not able to be there for the Zoom meetings because they're in childcare 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. And their childcare has said, we're not doing curriculum support. We're, you know, we're providing care for your children, but we have kids from different districts or whatever. Oh, if, okay. You know, if the opportunities for kids, if you can provide this fantastic remote learning opportunity, but not all kids are going to be able to access it, how does that play into that sort of risk reward scenario?
Okay. So in the spring, we have some incredible people that work in our district. And one of the curriculum directors actually worked really hard at getting us to create what were like choice boards. So those would be given to the families either in the printed form or online, so that during this week, these are the experiences you can have. And we worked hard to make those be outdoors in addition to being inside for math and for literacy. So that's a way that families can say, okay, it's 7 o'clock at night, and now I have this time. Now I can experience this. And they were things that the kids could do on their own to reinforce some of the skills that they learned. Does that answer
yeah.
your question?
Yeah, that's interesting. Eric, what about for you? I mean, that's part of the scenario here is every family and every school district and certainly every educator is going to have a different personal and professional situation that they're trying to navigate. You know, in a non-pandemic setting, we kind of know how the world works, and we've arranged all of our lives around, you know, this sort of standardized educational model and standardized work model. And not all of us have a standard work model, but we sort of know the parameters. And in this current situation in the world, everything is topsy-turvy. And so everybody's work is different, and every teacher is experiencing different things at home and a different model coming down from their administration, and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, how do we figure out, like, that risk reward of, you know, remote may be a better plan for students, but only if they can sort of access that fully robust remote program?
Wow, there's a lot of things in there. I mean, one, I would say that every district having different plans, you know, is similar to the lack of a national federal response to this, right? If we had closed everybody down in every state for 4 weeks, we'd be beyond this by now. We'd mm-hmm. be more like European countries, right? So that's a problem. And in a microcosm in Vermont, that schools don't have a unified plan to close down and slowly open a school spigot over time means that we are putting everybody in danger. When my community decides to go remote and a neighboring community is still doing 5 days in person, that really dilutes the effect of the sacrifice that, you know, my school is making by shutting down. So that's problematic that we don't have leadership on that, both nationally and in the state. As far as, you know, the different situations everybody has, you know, so one of the people who wrote in mentioned the parents versus being pitted versus teachers, you know, and I think a lot of the parental call for schools to open is based on a childcare crisis that's existed long before the pandemic, right? And mm-hmm. it's just been exacerbated by the pandemic. And so while I think some people want in-person learning, what a lot of parents want is publicly funded childcare system. But that burden shouldn't fall on the already overburdened schools, right? There could be a coordinated government response that could combine, you know, funding, innovation, collaborative partnerships between public and private employers to provide childcare. You know, Denmark and Sweden have free universal childcare. You know, it's the richest country in the history of the world. We could probably do that too. I mean, there's other temporary solutions, like, you know, we could have paid family leave, which would help parents create a patchwork of childcare during the crisis. Unfortunately, Governor Scott, you know, vetoed that bill both in 2018 and in January. So there are ways to provide for our childcare crisis. But if we're all in this together, it can't just fall on schools. There are a lot of other public and private partners who need to assist with that burden.
We got a note from Chelsea who says, I'm a fourth grade teacher in Essex. As a fourth grade teacher in a public school, I'm seeing the pressure of Healthy Start in direct conflict with the overwhelming need for equity and anti-racist, anti-bias practices, especially since this disease will affect certain students disproportionately. How do you see Vermont's need for classroom equity working within a COVID-present classroom? Also, is this something we are equipped to do successfully without dramatic reforms to our system that support the protection and success of our most vulnerable students? Joe, I want to toss this to you, but I'm also going to add Peter's note. Peter tweets, "I'm very concerned for all of us, especially for at-risk students, staff, and families. Part of that group are Black, Indigenous, and people of color who are disproportionately impacted by this virus because of systemic inequities. I worry that the Scott administration is ignoring this fact due to low population percent." So, Joe, you teach at Montpelier High School. How do you see race and ethnicity and equity and inequity coming into play this fall?
Well, that's an excellent question. I think one of the things that we have to keep in mind is that when you're in person in school under normal circumstances, there are already many inequities that exist. Remote learning, if we went there, would reveal new or different or other types of inequities, but these things exist already. And I think I would echo some of the frustration that my panelists here have mentioned, which is that a lot of people are talking about teachers and about schools and about learning, but very few people are engaging with us to help solve these problems. I think that, you know, we all defer to Dr. Levine and the health experts, but when it comes to students, learning, teaching, we're the experts. So lots of us are saying that we can't do this safely or we can't do it well enough to justify a reopening. And that's not us really stirring the pot or being obstacles. It's just expressing us our desire to be safe and effective in our place of work. And I'd add to that, related to the question, is that schools are being politicized to a large extent and used as a cover for political failure. Poverty, racism, lack of options, unfair influence of privileged folks over school boards, all of these things are contributing to this rush to reopen. And it's just a reopening for the sake of a reopening. It's not a conversation about whether or not this is healthy, safe, and effective. And maybe the last thing I'll add is that schools are public goods. When people reduce them to economic purposes or to credentialing or to a place for kids to get out of the house, we lose something important, which is that schools are about human beings. And human beings have dignity and value in themselves and deserve to be healthy and safe, no matter what background they're from.
Yeah, I mean, we'll put a period on that statement for sure. Let's hear from Karen, who's calling in from Burlington. Hi, Karen. Want to share your thoughts?
No matter what background.
Oh, Karen, you need to turn off your radio. I think you're hearing it on the radio, probably.
Let's hear from Karen, who's calling in from Burlington.
Karen, do you hear us now? Oh, Karen dropped. All right, we'll go to Adrian, who's calling in from Linden Center. Hi, Adrian, go right ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
So I was piggybacking on the thoughts about PE. I'm a Spanish teacher in Orleans Central in high school. And we're not a core subject, but, you know, kids elect to take languages all around the state. And we've been hearing from our members in the Foreign Language Association that COVID issues are causing budget cuts and that foreign language teachers are being cut disproportionately around the state. And that's a concern that I have at a time when we want to be giving kids as diverse an opportunity as possible with a lot of cultural links, that's one thing we really can't afford to be cutting. So I was just piggybacking on that idea of specials and art and music and PE, and we always seem to be the first ones to get cut.
Adrian, do you have a vision? I mean, if you were able to design something this fall that included, you know, enrichment, and I don't mean enrichment as separate from core subjects, but this idea that students could be getting all kinds of really interesting and maybe experimental learning, including language, how would you do that?
Well, I think we all learned on the fly on March 17th how to be remote teachers. I took advantage of a lot of different online platforms and got all of my kids' accounts, and, you know, we tried to do as many online things as possible. But I think we're all in such a weird place trying to be teachers who are going back to school in a few weeks. But I think a lot of us, you know, are planning on probably being remote by October. So all of the planning and efforts and publications and the things from the AOE, you know, I think a lot of us are cautiously optimistic, but many of us think, okay, well, in October, we're going to be back to remote teaching again. So it is hard to plan.
Yeah, to say the least, hard for anybody to plan under this scenario. Adrian, thank you very much for your perspective. Kate LaBelle, you teach physical education at Rutland Intermediate School. You know, what about this idea of how of the sort of elevation or value of certain subjects over others and how to do it remotely? And for teachers who you must also talk with other kinds of teachers who are worried about, you know, how do I fit into this plan as it shifts and changes for schools in Vermont around COVID-19 this fall?
Yeah, I think we are, you know, realistic, but also hopefully optimistic. I know in the fall, or the spring rather, it was such an emergency situation. I think so many families were very stressed and nervous about how remote learning was going to work with their work schedule. And we were all just kind of thrown into this unexpected circumstance. And I think that we were kind of put on the back burner as specials. And I understood that. It wasn't like an ego hit for me. I understood that there was just everyone was trying their best. But I think if we were to go remote in the fall now, I think that we should have a better plan where unified arts or specials, whatever you call them, can be a huge help to students' mental health at home. It doesn't have to be something that you just do once you're done with all of your math and your English and your social studies. Let's prioritize and put a specific schedule in where this is when you get to move your body and this is when you get to, you know, express yourself through music and this is when you get to take an art break, like, you know, just having the outlets and coping strategies for our students. If we do go full remote, they're going to need those things to help with the stress and the isolation of working from home and looking at screens all day.
Yeah, let's go to Pat. Pat's on the line with us from Manchester. Hi, Pat. What's your perspective?
Well, my perspective is as a parent. I have one in high school and one at the University of Vermont. Every one of the teacher callers that you've had are members of the NEA, and they're reading from the NEA playbook. In fact, to suggest that they can't go back to school until we cure inequity or racism is poppycock. We have 40% of American families with kids at home. Some of those kids are high schoolers, like mine. You don't get daycare for high schoolers. This idea that we need universal daycare before we can put the kids to school is out of the NEA playbook. Parents, surveys suggest 70% of parents want the kids back. Online learning doesn't work. Cable doesn't work in this state. You don't have the internet. You talk about hurting poor kids. This hurts poor kids. Some of them don't get meals.
So wait, Pat, let me stop you for a second because I hear a lot of emotion in your voice and I wonder where the anger is coming from.
The anger is that they have politicized this crisis to their own benefit, they being the teachers' union. If you look at the CDC data, okay, let's look at the data. This does not affect young people. It affects heavy people. It affects old people. It does not affect children.
Well, Pat, I hear you, and thank you for your perspective, and thank you for sharing this, because I think it gives us an opportunity to talk about it. I do want to point out that you're incorrect about whether the virus can affect young people or healthy people. It certainly can. We know there are risk factors that come with age and that come with certain health conditions, but I want to set the record straight that we do absolutely know that people of all ages and of all health conditions can get COVID-19, and some of them can get extremely sick or die from this virus, even if they are in good health to begin with. So it's not true that young people don't get it. However, you know, when we look at the risk factors for adults, which are higher, and for conditions that can come along with adulthood, that can increase the risk even further. And so that is a risk for many teachers. And we know we're having an aging workforce in Vermont. So certainly that is a risk. Now, you know, Pat talks about the NEA and the teachers union and this ability to sort of band together. Joe, can you talk a little bit to Pat's concerns? Pat, as a parent, saying, my kids need to be in school. You know, are you just trying to get out of teaching in person?
Sure. Well, just full disclosure, I'm a proud member of the Vermont NEA, and organized labor to me is a force for good. So I just want to put that on the table. To be honest, I mean, things like the South Korea study, I mean, they analyzed 65,000 people, and it demonstrated that kids over 10 are just as likely to transmit the virus as adults. So to me, it follows that you wouldn't want to gather humans over the age of 10 in small spaces, in large numbers, for hours at a time, in rooms that don't have great air quality. I think people could get hurt. And while I totally agree that I want to be back in person, and that's probably in the long run the better way to deliver education, I just don't think that's material to whether or not it's safe to do so, right? I mean, of course we want to be back. We want to be with the kids, but if it's unsafe to do so, that's got to be the first concern.
Eric, what's your level of work for remote learning versus your level of work and number of hours that you put in for in-person instruction? I mean, just honestly speaking.
In the spring is all I have to go on right now, and that was emergency learning, and it resulted in, you know, innumerable hours of, emails, phone calls, even text messages. I did a thing I've never done before, which was to give out my personal cell phone number to students and family so I could try to make contact with parents and kids. And it resulted in a lot of time, because where I might, be able to address a message to a group of, 20 students in a classroom, when there were kids I couldn't reach, I was doing that one at a time sometimes. Plus, the nature of online learning, when it's done right, it's asynchronous, which means, different kids have different times when they can respond, when they can talk, when they can join a video conference. So I would certainly not say, particularly spring, that it was any easier. In fact, I'd say it was a great bit more difficult than trying to teach in person in the building. A lot of that has to do with the fact that it was novel. So.
We got a note from Lisa who says, I'm a teacher in Worcester. I've been frustrated by the argument by health officials and leading pediatricians that we know in-person schooling is going to be best for kids because they need the social emotional learning and experiences in addition to academic learning. As teachers, most of us would not disagree with the critical roles schools play in meeting social and emotional needs of kids. But what we are returning to in the buildings is not what we left. Kids are going to be very limited in their typical social-emotional opportunities with seating, pods, and distancing. And this might actually not be a socially and emotionally safe place for many students. And while I've often heard health officials saying that kids are resilient, I am wary of how much of this we ask children to shoulder with their, quote, resilience. Stephanie says, I'm a high school teacher in Chittenden County and also a parent of high school students. I'm very worried about what hybrid school will look like in our district. My workload to prep both remote and in-person lessons at the same time will make all of my teaching suffer. I know if I were teaching all remotely, I could do a much better job to create engaging lessons and connect with students. My remote experience last spring was pretty good. Most students learned and engaged and did good work. It will be much harder for me to manage both remote and in-person students at the same time, especially in such a restricted environment where everyone is afraid. I would much prefer to bring our neediest students who benefit from some in-person teaching or who need a safe place into the building a couple days a week and teach everyone else remotely. Lots of perspectives, lots to talk about. Andrea says, I'm concerned I'm being treated as a science experiment, not a professional educator. And Michelle writes, I'd like you to bring up that some districts in Vermont are asking staff to sign a liability waiver. Basically, this is in case we get sick or die, we will not hold the district liable, even though we know a safer option, teaching remotely, could be offered. I'd like to know what our panel today thinks of that. Eric Hutchins is a social studies teacher at Lamoille Union High School. Amy Braun is a kindergarten and first grade teacher at Rochester Elementary School. Kate LaBelle is a physical education teacher at Rutland Intermediate School. And Joe Carroll is a Latin and philosophy teacher at Montpelier High School. You know, as you think about this, as we have this conversation, tomorrow on Vermont Edition, we will be joined by Dan French, the Secretary of Education. So I'd love to pose to each of you, what you want the state to know and what you think could be done here in almost mid-August as we rapidly approach the beginning of the school year. Is there something that you think the state is not doing that perhaps it could do that would be helpful? Kate LaBelle?
I think my perspective as a parent and a teacher is that, and as a single parent, I'm going to be going back to school 5 days a week, but my child's school is completely remote, and that has been probably my biggest stressor this summer. And I think that a lot of teachers are going to be, instead of their kids utilizing public education, are going to be paying out of pocket to these childcare services that are not their children's schools so that they can go in person. And I wish there was something being done that's more mindful of teachers who are being required in one district to be there 5 days a week. And then the next district, just 12 minutes away, is completely remote. And it's hard to realize that we're not only putting our health at risk by going into school, but we're paying a lot of money for our kids to go to private daycares or private schools. Because the public schools are closed and we can't be home with them to help with their remote learning.
What would you say, though, to parents whose schools are fully remote, or like your children's schools are hybrid, but the parents aren't remote or can't do their jobs while also instructing their kids. I mean, there are a lot of parents who, for better or worse, do see school as part of the childcare picture for them as they work. How, you know, Kate, how would you talk to parents who say, but I need something?
Yes, I think that it's there's no perfect answer. I understand, like, there really is, it's hard. I think that I have been very fortunate thus far. In the spring, my hours weren't docked, my salary wasn't docked. I was still very happy to have a job, and I was very lucky to be able to keep my three-year-old home with me. And I know that that's a very privileged thing to kind of have avoided a lot of the turmoil that a lot of families have gone through with job loss and unemployment. So I know that I have had a lot of privilege in this situation, and I know that people want their kids in school because they need paychecks and they need to put food on the table. It's obviously a very difficult situation.
Yeah, Amy, you also teach young students, kindergarten and first grade. You know, if there were a remote plan, parents would need to be supervising much of that and certainly would need something for their kids if they're going to be working anyway. How do you address that? And what do you want the state to do?
Well, I guess what I first of all want to say is that from top to bottom, it's kind of a broken system. And this has really been revealed through this crisis we're going through. And top to bottom, there are really good people. And so I know that everybody just wants to find a solution that works. But I want the state to know you can't shove it back in the box. We're outside the box right now. We escaped the box in March and revealed where our problems lie. And childcare is the biggest concern. We have an opportunity right now to go forward and to get creative. And so I believe locally there should be some childcare situations in place. And I think not only childcare, but have educators that feel comfortable being in the building, paraeducators that are willing because they feel safe, supporting families in doing the remote learning that's provided by other teachers who don't feel as comfortable. So there's a way to hybrid it where there's some choice involved. And the last thing I want to say, and this would be something I hope that they talk about tomorrow, is what are you choosing as far as the Department of Education? Are you choosing the emotional health of our families and our students? Or are you choosing to put some academic pressure on us to all catch up on what we're missing? So as an educator, I hope that I'm given an opportunity to really focus on the mental health of these kids as opposed to trying to catch people up.
Hmm. Joe and Eric, you each, you know, get a minute here before the bell. So, Eric, why don't you start? What do you need? What do you need from the state? Are you angry at the state? Is the state doing a good job? What should happen now?
I think what they've done right, both Secretary French and Governor Scott, is while they haven't, you know, provided the leadership that we expect, they've responded to public pressure, right? Like Governor Scott's March 13th press conference said schools remain open. And then enormous public pressure over the weekend caused them to close schools down with public health in mind on March 17th. And I think we need to see that now. You've heard from teachers today that they think this is going too fast and it's not safe. We need to slow down and make good plans. And I hope that they react to that enormous public pressure. Mm. And parents that want schools to open really need a childcare solution. And I think state government should take responsibility for that as well.
That's an interesting perspective. Joe, what about for you?
Well, I think we got to build some bridges. I think comparing and dividing people up based on the work they do or things like that, it's not a good way to have a dialogue about this. And I think it goes back to the idea that folks are trying to pit essential workers against each other rather than let us develop a collective consciousness that sees all our situations as inherently linked and frankly unstable in a political and economic situation like this, which is just unjust.
Mm. Wow, that's a fine point to put on the end here as well. I want to thank all four of you for joining us today, for being with us as we hear from other teachers around the state, too. Thanks to all four of you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Amy Braun is a kindergarten and first grade teacher at Rochester Elementary School. Joe Carroll is a Latin and philosophy teacher at Montpelier High School. Eric Hutchins is a social studies teacher at Lamoille Union High School in Hyde Park. And Kate LaBelle is a physical education teacher at Rutland Intermediate School.